Debt collection rules catch up with new technologies like email and texting. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishor, in for David Brancaccio, who's on assignment. If you owe money to a debt collector, you may be putting up with a lot of phone calls asking, maybe demanding money. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is proposing a new rule for debt collectors. It would let them not just call, but text and email, too. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer joins me now live from Washington. Nancy, haven't debt collection companies already been emailing and texting people?
Well, some have, but it's a legal gray area. The law on this, the Fair Debt Collections Practices Act, is from 1977, and the CFPB is trying to update the law to account for technology that's been developed since then.
Are there any limits here on texting and emailing for debt collectors?
No limit on how often they can email or text you, but there would be a limit of 7 phone calls a week. And if a collection agency actually got you on the phone, it would have to wait at least a week before calling again.
Would consumers have any way of opting out of these messages?
They could unsubscribe to debt collectors' texts or emails, and when a debt collector could contact them by phone, so they couldn't call you at work, for example.
What kind of reaction is the CFPB getting to this proposal?
Nobody's happy. Some consumer groups wanted the CFPB to limit debt collectors to 3 calls a week. They don't like the fact that there wouldn't be a cap on the number of emails or texts. Debt collectors want to be able to call consumers more often, and the CFPB is proposing another limit that would prohibit them from threatening to sue a consumer if the statute of limitations on a debt had expired.
Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer in Washington. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Let's do the numbers. The FTSE in London is down 0.3%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are down in the 4-5% range, with the Dow future down 95 points. The 10-year Treasury yield is at 2.43%. South Africans go to the polls today. There is a lot on the minds of voters there. Inequality, corruption, a backlash against immigration into the country. A lot for the winner to tackle. Marketplace's Andy Euler has more.
The African National Congress, or ANC, has been the ruling party of post-apartheid South Africa since the election of Nelson Mandela in 1994. It's 25 years.
And in a lot of areas, there's been good progress.
Zinhle Khosa is a visiting fellow from South Africa at the Woodrow Wilson Center in D.C.
But there's also the recognition that things could have been better.
Polls indicate the ANC is likely to retain control, but with a reduced share of the vote. John Campbell is a fellow in African studies at the Council on Foreign Relations. He says public disillusionment with crime, immigration, and corruption is diluting support for sitting president Cyril Ramaphosa.
He has to balance his free market proclivities with the fact that there are a large number of South Africans who feel left behind.
More than a quarter of the population is out of work, one of the highest unemployment rates in the world. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
Not everyone gets a chance to study the economy in school. Anyway, who doesn't need a brush up? Marketplace helps you continue your education in a way that we hope is smart, accessible, and hopefully even a bit fun. Your donation is not only an investment in your own learning, but also in helping us make more people smart about the economy. And that, we think, is good for everyone. To learn how you can help, visit marketplace.org/investors. Thank you.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.
China's economic slowdown is partly due to the government's efforts to clean up air pollution. The slowdown has also contributed to improved air quality. Chinese officials say they've made dramatic progress, especially in typically smoggy Beijing. The density in the air of tiny particles that cause a lot of health issues dropped 12% last year, after dropping 20.5% in 2017. Marketplace's China correspondent Jennifer Pak reports from Beijing.
Every day, Shen Zhou Lin checks the weather and air quality forecasts. I like to stay active, so I care about air quality. If it's polluted, I won't exercise outside.
And if the pollution is really bad, some people lock their windows and turn on multiple air purifiers, like Ms. Liu, who fears government retaliation, so won't give her full name. And if she must go out,
I have a gas mask for heavy smog.
But these days, you can feel the air has improved, says Li Xiuyan, who delivers yogurt drinks.
I don't drink or smoke, but my throat used to feel bad during smoggy days, and my nose was blocked with filthy stuff. These symptoms have disappeared over the last 2 years.
Engineer Zhou Yi says he didn't pay much attention to pollution before. He was busy making his fortune in real estate and bought 2 cars, a luxury for most Chinese.
Before, if I wanted to buy a bottle of soy sauce, I would drive to the supermarket because I felt it would be a loss of face for me to walk.
Now he takes public transport. He knows cars, construction sites, and coal heating are the biggest sources of air pollution in Beijing. This awareness came in 2013.
That year, 50 to 70% of the time, we couldn't see anything outside. It was dusty and the air smelled like chemicals.
Zhou Yi started taking photos of Beijing's skyline from the Central Business District every morning and posts them online for comparison. Many other residents also spoke out against pollution. Over the last 6 years, Zhou Yi has noticed more blue skies.
The improvement is because Beijing switched to cleaner energy like natural gas heating and electric buses. Heavy industries have shifted out.
He's now developing an app where you can take a photo and detect the air quality. In Beijing, I'm Jennifer Pak for Marketplace.
When the president imposed tariffs on foreign steel and aluminum, that created or saved some steel and aluminum-related jobs here in the U.S. Those tariffs also raised prices for anything that uses steel and aluminum, from buildings to water purification plants. The Peterson Institute for International Economics did a calculation. Each of those jobs, created or saved, cost U.S. consumers more than $900,000, more than 13 times the actual salary of a typical steel worker. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.